It's Wednesday, September 3rd, 2008, and it's 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good afternoon, dear Stashers. Glad to have you here for this Hemp Day Hump Day broadcast of the Daily Audio Stash. As usual, we will be digging into our cannabis science, and we'll start with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. And he's talking about a new report from CASA, the Center for Addiction and Substance Abuse, that shows teen availability of marijuana is higher than ever. Maybe if we make it more illegal, everybody will be able to get a hold of it. Then we'll be talking with Paul Armentano, the deputy director of Normal, regarding an Italian study that shows that marijuana or compounds in marijuana may be effective antiseptics and antibiotics against staph-resistant MRSA and other types of diseases like tuberculosis. Surprised you haven't heard it here in the U.S.? Well, we're not. And we'll bring it to you here at the Daily Audio Stash coming right up. We're also getting ready for the Portland Hemp Stock that is happening this weekend, Saturday and Sunday in Portland, Oregon, on the East Bank Esplanade, east side of the Willamette River at the base of the Hawthorne Bridge. I'll be there presenting some information and speaking as well, so if you get a chance to drop by, please do come on by and say hi. And then coming up in October, don't forget the National Normal Conference in Berkeley, California. That's going to be on October 17th and 18th and 19th in Berkeley, California, so I'll be there as well, recording information for the Daily Audio Stash, so get your reservations in now. There's a special block of rooms at the Doubletree. You got to hurry, though, if you want to get that discounted rate. Check it all out at normal.org. Okay, folks, time to load up a smoke dog dragon pipe and get right to it. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Antibacterial cannabinoids from cannabis sativa. Marijuana, cannabis sativa, has long been known to contain antibacterial cannabinoids whose potential to address antibiotic resistance has not yet been investigated. All five major cannabinoids, cannabidiol, cannabichromine, cannabigerol, delta-9-tetrahydrocannabinol, and cannabinol, showed potent activity against a variety of methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, or MRSA, strains of current clinical relevance. Preparations from cannabis sativa were investigated extensively in the 1950s as highly active topical antiseptic agents for the oral cavity and the skin, and as antitubercular agents. Unfortunately, most of these investigations were done at a time when the phytochemistry of cannabis was still in its infancy, and the remarkable antibacterial profile of the plant could not be related to any single, structurally defined, and specific constituent. There are currently considerable challenges with the treatment of infections caused by strains of clinically relevant bacteria that show multi-drug resistance, such as methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, or MRSA, and the recently emerged and extremely drug-resistant Mycobacterium tuberculosis, or XDR-TB. New antibacterials are therefore urgently needed, but only one new class of antibacterial has been introduced in the last 30 years. These considerations, as well as the observation that cross-resistance to microbial and plant antibacterial agents is rare, make cannabis sativa a potential source of compounds to address antibiotic resistance, one of the most urgent issues in antimicrobial therapy. This MRSA bug is serious stuff. It kills more people every year than does AIDS. Now, don't you think that if researchers had discovered that any other substance but pot was going to be the new cure for the superbug, that it would have been front page news? Or that if they found pot led to higher rates and deaths from MRSA, that it would have been splashed all over the headlines? Our government's continued suppression and willful ignorance of the overwhelming and mounting evidence that cannabis has medical efficacy is nothing short of a crime against humanity. Our government is willing to let its citizens suffer and die rather than relent on marijuana rescheduling. Our government is putting politics over science, again, so that our elected officials, many of whom smoked weed, won't send the wrong message about pot. College freshmen see prescription drug misuse more risky than alcohol or pot, from the U.S. News and World Report. Freshman college students think the occasional use of prescription drugs for non-medicinal purposes poses a greater risk to their health than smoking pot or knocking back five drinks every weekend, a new study indicates. Between 2004 and 2006, just over 1,250 first-year undergraduate college students were interviewed to assess their inclinations toward attention-seeking behavior, their drug use history, and the relative degree to which they perceived prescription drugs, both analgesics and stimulants, alcohol, marijuana, and cocaine, to be harmful. While approximately a quarter of all students expressed the view that occasional non-medicinal prescription drug use involves little or no risk, just over a quarter said they thought that such use of stimulants and analgesics entails a great risk. This risk perception fell far short of the danger the students attributed to the occasional use of cocaine, which more than 72% said involved similar great risk. However, unauthorized prescription drug use was thought to be more risky than smoking marijuana or drinking five or more alcoholic beverages each weekend, each of which was described as similarly risky by approximately 7% and 17%, respectively. 72% of freshmen think cocaine is risky, 25% think prescription drugs are risky, 17% think binge drinking is risky, and only 7% think smoking marijuana is risky. I hate to have to tell them that they are wrong. Smoking marijuana in college is far more risky than popping pills or drinking. They won't take away your college aid if they catch you with pills or booze. They also won't kick you out of student housing for pills or booze. Fort Collins to pot-growing couple, we won't pay up for dead marijuana plants. From the Coloradoan. The city of Fort Collins has rejected a local couple's request for more than $200,000 in compensation for their destroyed marijuana plants. Under the state's medical marijuana law, Amendment 20, the government is supposed to maintain someone's marijuana plants if they are seized as part of a criminal investigation. If the investigation reveals the plants were properly kept as the law permits, the agency is supposed to return them. But when James and Lisa Masters got their 39 plants back last December, they were all dead. Fort Collins police seized the plants as part of a criminal investigation into the Masters' pot-growing operation. The couple operates a medical marijuana dispensary in Fort Collins and claimed they were legitimate caregivers for people who need pot to control their pain and other ailments. Judge James Hyatt threw out the case against the Masters in 2006 after ruling police illegally searched their home. Now, the sheriff in Larimer County thinks the medical marijuana law is absurd, specifically the portion that tells cops they can't just seize legitimate medicine, plants, and let them die. In his latest online newsletter, he jokes that following the law by maintaining medical marijuana plants in an unused jail cell space could be a new source of county revenue.
Another possibility is to use the space to grow and sell marijuana, only for medicinal purposes, of course. Some would argue that the ill-conceived state law requires us to cultivate marijuana seized from grow houses once a person alleges that the marijuana is for medicinal purposes for either themselves or other undisclosed individuals, regardless of whether they have a medical marijuana license. None of the law enforcement agencies on the Front Range have a greenhouse, but we have the grow lights we've seized from illegal grow operations, so we could convert the vacated cell block to an indoor grow operation. We could charge other agencies to grow their dope, and if the case doesn't require us to return the weed to the charged person, we could get a medical marijuana license from the state and sell it for a profit. A win-win.
Yeah, and the ironic thing is that the sheriff is on the right track as far as providing a new source of county and state revenue. Studies show that America could reap $10 to $14 billion in law enforcement savings and sin tax revenue if marijuana were taxed and regulated similar to hard liquor. Colorado spends $64 million per year enforcing marijuana laws and could reap $12.2 to $17.6 million per year through taxation of cannabis sales. Venezuela rejects visit of U.S. drug czar Walters, Caracas, Venezuela. The Venezuelan Foreign Ministry has rejected a visit by John P. Walters, director of the U.S. National Drug Control Policy Office, calling the proposed trip useless and ill-timed. A ministry statement issued Sunday said the American anti-drug chief, quote, would better use his time to control the flourishing drug trafficking and abuse in his own country, end quote. Venezuelans are displeased with the visit, it added. The fight against drugs has actually, quote, seen significant progress in Venezuela in the last few years, especially since the Bolivarian government ended the cooperation programs with the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration, or DEA, end quote, the statement said. Venezuela ended cooperation with the DEA in 2006, accusing it of espionage. The government of President Hugo Chavez reaffirmed Sunday that the DEA operated in an illegal way on Venezuelan territory and openly conspired against the South American country's democratic and constitutional order. The U.S. government has been able to send thousands of soldiers to Iraq and to persecute Latin American countries, yet it was inefficient in the fight against drugs, the ministry statement said. In his Sunday TV program, Hello President, Chavez accused the DEA of collaborating with drug dealers. Now if only U.S. citizens had the power to reject visits by the DEA.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid and which claims are reefer madness? Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at
cannabis science.
So we're back from our long vacation, and as we do at the middle of every week, we like to talk about cannabis science, the latest studies and reports about cannabis, and we do so with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who's an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany. Dr. Mitch, welcome back to the Stash.
Great to be back.
Hey, you sent me this study. This comes out of Joe Califano's group out there at the CASA, the Center for, Addiction and Substance Abuse?
You got it.
And this study has to do with the parents and kids and some interesting findings in this study. And I thought I'd just give you a chance to tell our listeners a little about it.
I mean, this is over a 70-page paper, but the bottom line is just that marijuana is persistently available to teens. Russ, I was stunned to learn 23% reported they could get pot in an hour or less.
Wow.
I'm on the podcast once a week. I can't get pot in an hour or less. I mean, this is pretty stunning. And 42% said they could get marijuana within a day or less.
Wow.
This is 70 years of prohibition now, and this is what we have. I mean, this was up from last year and clearly one of the highest rates of availability we've ever had. The underground market is obviously not keeping cannabis out of the hands of teens. And that was our whole idea. That was the point of this prohibition in the first place. And when we go back to the 1930s and hear all the horror stories that marijuana was supposed to cause, and clearly none of these things have panned out, and then the last hope was, well, at least it's going to keep these drugs away from our kids. Obviously, it is not. If we need a stronger message for, you know, why it's time to change, I honestly can't imagine what it could be. Do we have to have every single teen say, I can get pot in an hour? It's really stunning to me.
Well, it's amazing with, you know, we've seen the arrests go up year after year after year, and this report itself says that there's been a 35% increase from 2007 to 2008, 35% increase in teens who can get marijuana in an hour or less, and a 14% increase over the last year for teens who can get it in a day or less. So the more arrests just seems to make it easier to get for some reason.
Well, and the funny thing is, I feel like teens in particular are targeted, and both, you know, law enforcement folks and the data suggests that when, you know, teens are caught with cannabis, they do get the book thrown at them, in part because of this strong sentiment to keep cannabis out of the hands of teens. You can imagine, well, gee, if we had a tax and regulated market, would things be better? Well, you look throughout this report, and consistently we see that teens say they have a harder time getting a hold of alcohol than they do of marijuana. So here's this, you know, nice tax and regulated substance that is actually, you know, often in people's houses, and they say they essentially are having an easier time getting this than they are a harder time getting this than they are the cannabis that is supposedly so illicit and so underground.
Now, of course, this report doesn't want to do anything to look at the problem of prohibition. It wants to foist this problem on what they call problem parents. And well, we have seen some research, and you and I have talked about this, about some of the ways that parents can help their kids stay away from drugs. I'd like to talk a little bit about that, but also, you know, how Califano and this CASA group wants to try to blame this on what they call problem parents, I think misses the mark a little bit.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly, and you can imagine Joe Califano hearing us say, well, this is a sign for basically legalizing cannabis. They would, you know, have a conniption to it. But really, again, when you look really close at these data, it really does suggest that the tax and regulated stuff is, in fact, less likely to reach the hands of teens. And then he does pitch this kind of strange problem parents idea that they're just these bad parents out there, and that's why kids are doing this. Obviously, well, I've never met his kids, but, you know, kids are their own human beings and
yeah,
make their own decisions and things. The one statistic that I do like to point to is something we've discussed in the past, is just that parent involvement and having dinner at home. And it's funny how hanging out with your own children and, you know, having a nice dinner at home 5 to 7 nights a week suddenly makes this dramatic impact on not only teen drug use, but also other problematic behaviors. Some as severe as teen pregnancy, which is kind of a big thing in the news right now.
Oh, yeah.
But also, you know, even minor things like, you know, getting more homework done and just having, you know, a warmer, closer relationship with the parent. And I, you know, I encourage this time and again, but the bottom line is you often discover, hey, your kids are really delightful little people. And if you, you know, even spend just an hour and a half over chicken and rice, it's stunning how much you learn about their lives and all the things they've learned. And you get a nice perspective on the way things are in the world.
And another thing that I found interesting in this survey, he has a big headline here that says, more teens say prescription drugs are easier to buy than beer. They've been asking this in this survey, they've been asking which is easiest for someone your age to buy, cigarettes, beer, marijuana, or prescription drugs without a prescription. And they say over the years, teens indicated that cigarettes and marijuana were easiest to buy, followed by beer and prescription drugs. But for the first time this year, more teens told us that prescription drugs are easier to buy than beer. What would you attribute that to?
In fact, I'm discovering this from my own undergrads here, and I don't mean to malign SUNY Albany, but they're telling me that the internet availability is astounding, and that, in fact, they fill out these rather bogus medical forms, and the alleged physician somewhere in Paraguay or something confirms that they have whatever disorder it is, and suddenly they get some wild overseas envelope filled with opiates, stimulants, whatever drug of the week, and that they do tend to be able to, you know, mix and match and trade with their friends, and, you know, I'll give you one Ritalin for a Vicodin kind of thing, and that this has become, in some sense, a new underground market in drugs and drug use, and it's all, you know, sort of a blind eye from the pharmaceutical companies, and these are, you know, essential medications, and I'd hate to see them leave the market. But clearly, educating folks on the negative consequences of these would be a big, big plus. Some of these stimulants can be lethal at high doses. They're incredibly addictive, particularly relative to cannabis. And, you know, these opiate drugs, my goodness, they can, you know, drag you right into a life of addiction in ways that are just astounding. Obviously, it's not the case for everybody, but surely not something you want to mess with, particularly early in life when there are so many other things to enjoy.
You know, I posted a story on the Stash yesterday about a drug testing in a Kentucky school where they had found that only one out of 550 kids they drug tested came up positive, and that was a positive test for alcohol. Do you think that this drug testing regime that's been foisted upon the students, these kids in America, has motivated them to move away from cannabis, which is so easily detectable, and onto these prescription drugs?
It's sad but true, Russ. So now you're suddenly in the situation where you know certain substances are definitely going to get you in trouble, and others are going to give you the chance to get away. Everybody really knows that hallucinogens are often used in such small doses, particularly LSD, that they're pretty hard to detect with essential, you know, urine tests. So now I'm getting kids who are basically saying, well, we didn't want to smoke pot because we knew we'd get busted, so we each did a quarter hit of acid. I mean, that just fills me with dread. What a bummer of a situation to have this be the decision. And then I used to get maybe one email a month. Now I get three a week about, you know, how can I beat a drug test in these various ways. And I feel like the drug testing industry has this evil twin, the drug testing beating industry. And so now there are products on both sides going back and forth, and I can't help but suspect in this kind of crazy octopus sort of way that they're in cahoots with each other. As each new thing develops, the other side develops something else new and just keeps us all spending money trying to keep really harmless things out of the information and hands of employers or folks who really should be more concerned with how are you doing in life, not what do you do with your free time.
Yeah, it reminds me a little of that escalating arms race that we had back in the Cold War of the 80s, where each side had that mutually assured destruction, although I guess this is more like symbiotic in nature, where, you know, each industry depends on the other. And speaking of industries, you know, you made that mention about the pharmaceutical industry really not clamping down on these internet pharmacies. So, you know, there's a lot of profit motive involved in that, too.
It's a rough predicament, and I'm, you know, never a fan of prohibitions of this kind of sort. And yet I do feel like, you know, better controls for the use of these substances is certainly possible. But more than anything, educating the consumer. I got a feeling that, you know, 16, 17, 18-year-olds are running around thinking that these drugs are essentially toys, and if they had more information, they would definitely leave them alone, just as we did back, you know, in the turn of the century when people suddenly discovered that, you know, Dr. Poppy's magic elixir actually did have opium in it, and they said, oh my goodness, I don't want to get strung out on this, and they all put it aside. And now I think we, you know, have that opportunity if people were better informed about the pharmaceutical drugs.
Mm. Yeah. Now, one last thing in this report. Again, the report tries to lay a lot of this at the feet of the parents that are involved with these kids. And one of his big quotes is to bring back that old saying from back in the day. It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are? How much of this is scaremongering, and how much of this report, with what they say about how the parents can help by, you know, monitoring their kids late or during their school nights or any of that, how much of that should we accept, and how much should we take with a grain of salt?
I'm afraid it's our recurring theme about correlation and causation, Russ. So it does turn out, at least from these data, that the kids who are staying out late, particularly during the weeknights, are the ones who say, not that they're using more drugs, but at least that drugs are being used when they're out, both alcohol and marijuana on this. But I don't think it's the staying out late that is the cause. And if we are going to all just pull our kids in, that's just going to make them do drugs a lot earlier.
Yeah.
I feel like this is, in fact, an index, sort of a spurious correlate, if you will, of this family involvement thing. So what a surprise if you're hanging out at home having a nice rap with your parents and reading a book and having a good time. You don't stay out late, but you also have this nice kind of relationship that's usually a buffer against problematic drug use, and you have other interests in things like academics and sports and religious observance and things like that, that are usually going to prevent you from at least developing problematic use. And I feel like this staying out late is just kind of a proxy for that. So, yeah, you know, you can give your kids a new curfew, but I feel like that's treating the symptom rather than the cause. Instead, why not sit down and have a talk and start building a relationship?
Yeah, I had to laugh when I saw it's 10 p.m. Do you know where kids are? Because I don't remember any pot smokers talking about getting together at 10:20.
Exactly. Oh,
Dr. Mitch, it's been great talking to you again. We talk with Dr. Earlywine every Wednesday here on the Daily Audio Stash with the latest in cannabis science. And thanks for dropping by.
Thanks for having me on the show.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our Daily Audio Stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. It's so good to be home. In light of all the political speeches this week, I get a bit cynical with today's music as we hear from The Stills and their song, Snake Charming the Masses. It's good rock and roll, it's a bit intense and really driven. The Stills met as art students in Montreal, Quebec, and most recently opened for Sir Paul McCartney in Quebec City. This Canadian fiver is Tim Fletcher on vocals and guitar, Dave Hamelin on vocals and guitar, Liam O'Neill on keyboards, Olivier Corbeil on bass, and Julian Blaze on drums. This track is from their album Oceans Will Rise that just came out last week. Fresh. Still has that new CD smell. If you'd like more information on The Stills and their album, Oceans Will Rise, check out our post at stash.normal.org, where we've got an informational link for the album and an MP3 download of this song. It's The Stills with Snake Charming the Masses.
Hi, this is Alan St. Pierre, the Executive Director of NORML. We are the oldest, largest, and best-known marijuana law reform organization in America. And it's all because of your support. Take some time to join NORML at www.norml.org. Your membership supports this podcast, our websites, our policy research and analysis, and our annual conferences. Changing marijuana laws is a grassroots effort, and it starts with you, the stakeholder. Join NORML today and add your voice to the millions of cannabis consumers who demand equality with our beer-drinking friends.
Here on Wednesday, we get a double dose of cannabis science because we found a really interesting study. Our deputy director of NORML, Paul Armentano, joined us by the telephone here, and he just recently had a post up in the Huffington Post, among other places. And Paul, welcome back to the Stash.
Good to be here, Russ.
Now, this post, this was about a new study that had come out, and you and I keep talking about this in our discussions about how when there's a story about a study coming out about marijuana that purports something horrible about it, it gets front page news. Of course, when something good happens, it doesn't get the front page news, and this would be, I think, one of the classic examples of that. Tell our listeners a little bit about this MRSA study.
Sure. This is actually a very interesting study for, you know, quite a few reasons. One would be, you know, just personally, this study really took me by surprise. I have to say, in all the years that I have been studying this issue, I have never read a study that assessed the antibacterial properties of cannabis. And what was surprising about this study was the fact that the investigators talked about how up until the mid-1950s, this apparently was one of the topics that was most studied regarding the potential medical use of marijuana.
Now, we're talking about like a topical use here?
In 1952, scientists were very well aware that you could take cannabis, make it a topical agent, and use that as an antiseptic.
Right.
But apparently that knowledge went down the memory hole over the last 50 years or so.
Yeah, right about the same time the 1960s pop up, and we start getting that culture war against marijuana, it would seem.
Exactly.
Now, this study, this was an Italian study that appeared, and they're talking about the antibacterial properties of cannabinoids, not just the Delta-9 THC, but the cannabidiol, cannabigerol, all these other compounds that aren't psychoactive. And what surprised me about this study here is them, like you say, showing that we have this research going back to the 50s, showing this antibacterial property. And the astounding thing is how necessary or how needed this is in the modern hospitals now that we're having this rash of infections with this, what they call the superbug.
Right. MRSA, or, you know, sometimes referred to as the superbug, really is a subject that has been making a lot of headlines, and with good reason. There was a report in JAMA a couple of years ago that tabulated that more people now die in hospitals each year as a result of MRSA than, in fact, they die from AIDS every year. It's close to 18,000 Americans are now dying because they are getting these infections either in hospitals or in prisons, and that these infections cannot be treated with standard antibiotics. So as a result, investigators like this team in Italy are actually searching for potential antibacterial agents in plants to replace things like penicillin that these bacteria have now become resistant to. And as I said, it was really surprising to me to find that these investigators simply went back to through the medical literature about 50 or 60 years and basically took cannabis, which at one time had been, as I noted, widely studied as a topical antiseptic agent, and really tried to bring that back into the modern age for treatment against this new superbug. And you are correct to note that, in fact, they were not just looking at THC. They were looking at a number of different cannabinoids, five in all. And all five of those, they noted, had these strong antibacterial properties, specifically to treat different strains of MRSA, including a strain that is quite deadly, apparently, in hospitals in the United Kingdom, where one of the investigators in this study was from.
Yeah, and another thing that I'd noted in the study here is they showed they were talking about the promise of this sort of treatment with cannabinoids, how promising it was because it's a plant-based antiseptic or antibiotic versus one of these bacterial-based, and how there's not a lot of cross-resistance that develops. So they're looking at it as something that could fight this MRSA or some of these resistant tuberculosis that we're seeing and not face the same dangers of the bug being able to fight against it. Like they have with the traditional antibiotics. And, you know, like we've said, this is something that should be front page news.
Yeah, you would really hope so. And God forbid, you know, Russ, if they did this study and found that, in fact, when they applied cannabinoids to different strains of MRSA, that the MRSA somehow became more resistant, that probably would have been front page news. But, you know, of course, the finding that cannabinoids could potentially halt the spread of MRSA. You know, for whatever reason, the mainstream media did not find that newsworthy. I did blog about this on Huffington Post and on a few other sites, and I did notice that a handful of sort of wonky scientific sites did pick up on this story, but certainly nothing that could be called mainstream news media outlets paid any attention to this. Which, you know, on the one hand is disappointingly predictable, but on the other, you know, it really is a bit surprising. One would think that you put in buzzwords like pot and MRSA in a headline, that, you know, at least somebody in the media would pay attention, but, you know, apparently not.
Well, it's so hard. We get this continual blackout on the issue, especially when we're talking about this medical issue at the federal level. And this brings me to my recent trip to Denver at the Democratic Convention and how the politicians, you know, just completely avoided the marijuana issue, you know, at this federal level. There was no talks about it. There were no presentations on it. But we did luck out and get a citizen who asked a question via the website Dig of Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi. And I thought your take on this was quite telling, you know, and very important take on this of how Nancy Pelosi and these politicians continually react to the medical issue as if we haven't done enough to push it. Why don't you just give a little background on that for me?
Sure. Well, there was an interview where individuals who log on to the website dig.com could pose questions to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and the questions that received the most support among Dig users would then be asked live to the speaker, I believe on CNN. And, you know, not surprisingly, the third question that was asked by the speaker was a question regarding not just medical marijuana, but essentially it was asking what needs to be done for Congress to take up the issue of both legalizing medical marijuana as well as the social use of marijuana by adults. And, you know, I think it is ironic that, as you noted, this is one of the first questions that the American public wants to ask leadership, yet when you, during the entire convention, as you noted, leadership went out of their way to make sure the drug issue didn't come up at all and that, you know, issues like marijuana would not be discussed. But, you know, when Nancy Pelosi was asked this question, to her credit, she did not duck it. She admitted that she personally has supported the medical use of marijuana, which is true. But then she did say that there just wasn't enough support yet for this issue in Congress, and that before Congress could really begin to move on this issue, they needed people outside of Congress to do more. Specifically, she advocated individuals write their congresspersons and ask them to support this measure. And while, you know, certainly that's all fine and good, I would never discourage people from being in touch with their elected officials. I think that is very important for them to do so. There was a side of me that was disappointed with that response, because I do believe that particularly when we're talking about the issue of the legalization of medical marijuana, here we have an issue that time and time again, National polls show between 75 and 80% of the American public support. You and I are talking today because a new study was just published in a scientific journal showing that compounds in marijuana have the ability to stave or reduce or alleviate various diseases. We have medical societies, dozens and dozens of them, coming out and demanding Congress to reschedule marijuana. There is outside pressure, and there has been outside pressure on Congress now for years, and it is Congress that has failed to respond to that outside pressure. And I believe it's time for Congress to start generating some pressure on their own and moving this issue forward. This is a no-brainer. There's hardly any political risk involved. Congress and leadership in Congress should be moving on this issue simply because the American public supports it, the science supports it, and frankly, it's the right thing to do.
Absolutely. And it's not as if when Congress was making all of these anti-drug laws, starting back in, you know, with Len Bias in the 80s and such, that there was a big public outcry for the anti-marijuana laws. So why does there need to be a, you know, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
No, and that's a great point. The pressure that Congress had in the mid-1980s to pass some of these harsh anti-drug laws like mandatory minimum sentencing, that was self-generated. Congress was pressuring itself to pass those sort of issues. They were not hearing an outpouring of letters from the public demanding that they make these moves. In fact, Congress moved so fast on the 1986 anti-drug bill, I doubt any of their constituents even knew they were working on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if only more of us had ink behind our names, maybe that might get the issue moving a little better. I don't know what it's going to take. Like you say, we've got so much public support for medical marijuana, so many scientific studies coming out showing the medical benefits of marijuana, and so many patients out there in the 12 medical marijuana states that are just living testament to the efficacy of medical marijuana. It truly boggles the mind.
Yeah, it really does. It really does, Russ.
Well, Paul, thank you for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash. Paul Armentano is the Deputy Director of Normal, and you can reach him by email at paul@normal.org. Paul, thanks for being here.
No problem, Russ. Good to have you back.
All right, good to be back. Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes, this one from the late George Carlin, who once said of marijuana, quote, "Doesn't make you sick, your breath doesn't stink, and you don't puke on your shoes," end quote. Oh boy, I'm really gonna miss George Carlin, and you know, he's right about that. I first started smoking marijuana on July 4th, 1990, and up to that point, I was a hardcore beer drinker. Once I smoked my first spliff, I went, wait a minute, why have I been drinking all that time and having hangovers and throwing up and feeling awful when I could have been smoking weed? I know it's a decision that a lot of other people make too, the decision to use the safer drug, marijuana. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here at The Stash. We'll be back tomorrow with our 420 comedy with Terry Joyce and more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.